Motion Picture Massacre 4 on September 14th. I know. There's a lot going on. I'll talk about it. 2021. It's fucking...
Here's a little song. I want to thank WNEW-FM for helping me out with a little song I wrote called Deep in the Heart of Jersey. Oh, the factory smoke will make you choke. Deep in the heart of Jersey, and the city rats running big packs. Deep in the heart of Jersey, oh, the parkway man takes a quarter from your hand. Deep in the heart of Jersey, and Route 17, the traffic there is mean. Deep in the heart of Jersey. For flies deep in the heart of Jersey, and the pizza man says I'm gonna understand. Deep in the heart of Jersey, oh, the dumps in June ain't like perfume. Deep in the heart of Jersey, but it's my state, I think it's great. Deep in the heart.
This is like take two, because I was editing the last one, and it's just fucking, this, I don't know what's going on. Either Audacity's being a cocksucker, or the microphone wasn't collecting things properly. I don't know. Anyway, hi everybody, Vaughn here. So I've been on a couple podcasts in the last couple weeks, as well as doing nothing for the show. You know, I still thank Brody Black for being on the show last episode. She's a real interesting person. I can't wait to have her on again. I really like doing those films. I thought it was very cool. But, you know, like, trying to explain to other podcasts, like, especially if those people don't listen to my show, the people who listen to those shows, what kind of show I do here without sounding like a dumb jackass. And it made me think about this after doing Lee's show, the third of three. I did The Grind Bin, Movie Melt, and Lee Russell's They Must Be Destroyed on Sight, which is available now, that episode. We did it on Siege, which is a 1983 Canucksploitation film, which is loosely based on an actual incident in Nova Scotia in 1981. The cops striked in 1981 for like 50-some days. So this is kind of like a weird kind of like, you know, this what if, I guess you can say, like if shit goes left, what could have happened? But anyway... it's a great episode. Look up on Google, They Must Be Destroyed on Sight, and you'll find it. It's the easiest way to get that show. Any show. My show, any show. Anyway, I don't know when the other two episodes are coming out. We did The Grind Bin on Disorderlies, and Movie Melt was Prom Night 3, The Last Kiss, which, that movie kind of sucks. I'll say it now. Anyway, what have I been doing? I got my thyroid removed, full thyroid removal, which is something rare, but it does happen. My girlfriend actually had hers removed a handful of years ago, so I'm not the only one in the world who's ever gotten it done. But a lot of things happen with that. Like, I recorded that show at Brody, and then the Friday before, I had kind of taken off work to kind of get a COVID test and quarantine myself, and my doctor was like, yeah, your levels still suck, and by the time you get here on Monday, we're probably going to have to hold you in the hospital, so why don't you admit yourself, and we can regulate everything and see how it works, and hopefully by Monday, you'll be good. So that's what I did. I went to the ER and hung out in a like overview station for a night, and then for 3 days, so until the following Monday. And I lost my mind, I think, at one point, because I was definitely delusional and, like, psychotic. I ordered a bunch of records in the middle of all of that, some really good stuff, but just kind of like when they came in, I was like, when did I do this? I checked my emails. I'm like, oh shit, like middle of the night on Saturday when I hadn't slept for 15, 22, 30 something hours. I slept on Friday night because I was so exhausted from sitting in the waiting room. And the nurse was really nice. She like let me sleep. She actually let me sleep until she told me at midnight when she did her last set of vitals that I was probably going to have to wake you up at 5:30. She let me sleep till 6:30 and did the vitals then, which was very nice of her. But the next 3 days, because like I was sleeping next to Methuselah, like the guy who was in the room with me was very old, and all he did was watch Yankees foot baseball and Price is Right and piss and sleep all the time. I know he was pissing because they had those cat, you know, those containers. Like he couldn't get up. He was that old. So he just pissed in a bucket and they would go out and fucking dump it every so many hours. So I got to see that. But I was kind of losing my mind, and I'm dating somebody, and you kind of, you know, it's kind of a, it's like a great way to be introduced in week two, week three, I think month one. Oh, by the way, I'm getting my thyroid removed. You want to visit? Okay, sure. But I'm not going to be in the best mental state or the best state at all. And I wasn't. I was completely fucking insane, rambling incoherently, looked like shit. Because the thing that happens when you don't sleep, your skin, like, fucks up. You look like a fucking zombie. And you just fall apart. And I remember this when I was a kid. I used to do this a lot when I was a kid because I was just trying to push myself to, like, see how many days I could stay up. And it wasn't good mentally. And I think it's kind of helped. It's kind of fucked up my brain completely. Because I did it when I was, like, you know, still developing in my teens. And it was not probably the best idea. Anyway. Like I said, I'm dating somebody. I'm actually dating somebody. Like, boyfriend, girlfriend thing. And I'm dating a woman. And this is the first time I can actually... I can say this out loud. Because most of the women I've ever dated... have always been girls. They've always had, like, dead-end jobs. They've always not been able to kind of take seriously their lives and kind of get their shit together. And the woman I'm dating now, Shauna, is very the opposite of that. She's very easygoing. She's been through a lot, and I really want to kind of change and make her life a lot happier. You know what I mean? And I understand it's like, yeah, but you just got out of a long relationship with one. Like, do you really want to dive deep into another one? And like, I dated a little bit before I met her. Like, I went on a couple of dates with people and dealt with prostitution. Another thing is, Tinder is a huge bed of prostitution. Huge bed of prostitution. I understand it's all like about getting laid, but a huge amount of the women that are trying to hit on you and you're talking to are ultimately just going to sit there and pull out a piece of paper with all their list of what you can and cannot do to them for a price. And it's like, yeah, I'm no offense, I'm not against sex workers, but I'm not particularly, if I want to pay for it, I'll pay for it, but I don't want to be kind of conned into it. You know what I mean? So I met her on another dating app called Bumble, which is a much more kind of straightforward thing. And it was much nicer. My brother kind of had to push me into that because he was like, I use this one. And I'm, you know, I don't do great, but I have had a lot of great, great conversations and a couple of really interesting dates. And I was like, okay, fine. So she was like the first girl that she was the first person who actually kind of like got past the first kind of couple of back and forths on this app. And then she sent me her number and we kind of been seeing each other ever since. And I just like spending every minute with her, that I can. I know I have a child and I spend as much as I can time with him. And my ex seems to think that I should just drop everything in my life and just work and spend time with him. But like, I can't be that way. You know, I can't be a monk anymore. I have to kind of be a little selfish and kind of put her ahead. But not like, kind of, it's a balancing act. And it's not fun for the most part, but it's, I have to learn how to, you know, spend my time with her and spend my time with my son and not deal with the bullshit from my ex, the kind of petty kind of like pity party garbage she tries to put on me, and just kind of get past that. And I know that like I'm saying this now and I'm kind of fearful to say it because like she hasn't, like there's certain things that haven't been done yet in our relationship past just the divorce, that could be used against me. And I'm kind of worried about that. But whatever. I'm really liking the direction my life is headed right now. And it's fun. Yes, I understand I'm still living at home, but I'm collecting as much money as I can. I'm sucking up all this overtime. And I'm just trying to save my money, like, just to get a place to get out. Like, and if it works out with her, and we can maybe do that, but I'm not really kind of counting, putting all those ducks in a row right now. I'm just kind of letting it fly, you know, and, like, doing that kind of shit, you know? I've watched a couple of things. I watched a lot. There's a Letterboxd list of all the films I watched while during recovery, which was a good group of films. I'm not going to particularly talk about them here. You can go and talk about, you know, go on to my Letterboxd, which is MP Massacre, and check it out. But I'll talk about two films me and Sean have seen in the theater. We saw Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings, which I thought was really good. Compared to the other Marvel film that's out this year, Black Widow, I think it's a heads and tails much better film. And the fact that what they used from other films within the series, this ongoing like 10-15 year fucking process of all these Marvel films, I thought was really neat and interesting. And just a real overall good time. And when it does come up on Disney Plus, I probably will watch it again. The thing is, I'm not collecting those films because they're on Disney Plus, it's just like such an easier thing just gonna watch them streaming, and I don't really need hard copies of them. Like, I have a bunch of those. Like, I have the Iron Man films because they're so kind of weirdly sentimental. I don't know. I really enjoyed the hell out of them. But, like, I don't really need any of those because they're all on Disney Plus. So, what's the point? I understand the special features, but they're kind of a boilerplate. You know what I mean? Disney doesn't let people, like, really kind of, like, let out, especially in commentaries and whatnot. It's kind of just the Disney way, which is silly. And then we saw Labyrinth on Sunday, the 35th anniversary. Phantom Events doing these screenings through theaters. It's a weird fucking film, but charming as hell. And I haven't seen it in a long time. And watching it on Sunday night with somebody I care about who was kind of like suggested it, like, yeah, let's go see this. I was really kind of just blown away how charming the film is and how, you know, magnetic David Bowie is. And it's such a good time. And a film like that could not be made today with the committee style of how films are made by the big fucking studios. It would just be torn to shit. Just like anything that Del Toro does, when he tries to make these big fucking films, they kind of, we can't do this, but you have a robot movie, a mech movie, and we can sell toys on, go do it. You know, we're not going to let you do Mountain of Madness, but we'll let you do this. And occasionally he gets a film for me, a film for them type of deal. But ultimately, like, the ultimate film, like the Mouth of Madness, the H.P. Lovecraft adaption, we'll never get. I'm probably fucking that up because I know. In the Mouth of Madness is a is a Carpenter film. I know the title. I just can't think of it right now because like I said, this is take two. Because as I was trying to record and edit this last episode, for some reason the feed was the recording was kind of fucked every 10 or so clicks, like it would just. Things would just be kind of crushed together. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. Awesome. Fuck. So, but that's pretty much what's been going on. You know, I'm very happy. If you follow me on Twitter, I'm deliberately posting stuff about my relationship with Shauna and like little fucking missives, like pop up like bits of poetry and whatnot that I'm writing that are stuck in my head and I'm writing in my notes in my phone. Posting photos and everything like that, because I feel comfortable on Twitter doing that. I don't have to answer to anybody on Twitter. On Facebook and Instagram, I have to answer to people. Like, and I have to be like, ugh. And I know the ramifications of posting photos of girlfriend on Facebook, especially because there's a lot of people on Facebook that don't know that I'm divorced. Especially like friends of friends of friends on old fucking high school acquaintances who met my ex-wife when we were together. Who don't know we're divorced and just can't read between the lines, I guess you could say. Like cousins and aunts and uncles that I don't talk to, that kind of stuff. So I posted something on Facebook today that was very cute. That kind of just indicates, and you know, Shauna got it, and a couple of people else got it, and the rest of you fucking assholes. I love you all. John Tipton, everybody, Eric Pearson. Like, all you guys just busting my balls. Beautiful. And the fact that she had to get in there on top of the dog pile and add to it, it was just lovely. But yeah, that's how my life's going right now. So why don't we... So if you're a first-time listener to this show, I do it by release order. So we're going to do 1980s The Gong Show movie. And I found a TV, like, I guess, commercial, and then Chuck Bear is talking about how disastrous the film was for his career.
Columbia Pictures did the Gong Show movie, and it was, I think that was a disgraceful movie. I mean, it may have some kind of cult following now, but when I went to see it, it opened on a weekend, and I had seen the night before a review of it on a CBS station, and the guy held up a garbage can and hit it with a hammer, and I thought that was a bad omen. But when I went to the theater, and I caught it like a 12:30 show, and I walked in, and the ticket taker said to me, "You're not going to like this one." And it lasted the weekend, and it disappeared. It was all over the place. And the first half of the movie was good. I think, but then I took it to a more serious level, and I think that was a huge mistake.
Well, when you say I took it to a more serious level, were you involved as writer?
Yes, I wrote the script.
Okay.
I directed it and appeared in it, and so forth and so on. So,
did the rest of the Gong Show regular cast, in terms of judges and whatever, appear?
They appeared throughout the movie, in segments of the Gong Show. But when we did the Gong Show for our test audience, we did it at USC in front of 1,500 students, and when Della, my daughter, came on, they booed 1,500 students. I mean, the booing was profound, and it had a big effect on my daughter. She ran out of the theater and found her crying.
Exhausted from your new movie, huh? I hear there's a scene where a guy blows out a candle by, and that you and your girlfriend, and that two young girls actually, no wonder you're exhausted. Hmm? You couldn't show it on TV? So you had to make it into a movie? Oh, goody!
The Gong Show Movie starts Friday at a theater near you, from Universal Pictures, rated R.
So, the Gong Show Movie is kind of a continuation from the Selected Works of Robert Downey Sr. episode that I did a couple months back. And I was talking to people about that, and it's like, I can continue to do these episodes on Robert Downey Sr. because I didn't do the 80s and I didn't do the 90s. The same year this film came out, he also made a film that got the moniker of Mad Presents Up the Academy, which originally wasn't supposed to be a Mad film. It just kind of got that way because of, you know, circumstance. A film that Downey has said in interviews that is his most hated film that he's ever made. And I love that. But there's never been really good copies of that film out, and I don't want to do it. Like I've said, like, I want to do a Norman Mailer film retrospective, maybe on Halloween. I'll put out, because now I have Vinegar Syndrome put out a copy of Tough Men Don't Dance, and I have the old Eclipse DVD set of Maidstone and Down by Law, and I forget the other film. So I can do all four films now in one big shot. But that's for another time. So originally this film was constructed to be written by Chuck Barris and Robert Downey Sr. and directed by Downey Sr. And it's the trials and tribulations of a handful of weeks in the life of Chuck Barris, the creator and producer of The Gong Show. And the fact that he has kind of really kind of dried himself out. One of the things that always people say about this film is that the reason this film flopped hugely, but a lot of people say that, oh, the reason, and the film flopped and it caused Chuck Barris to lose all of his programs. Chuck Barris at the time, by 1980, was burned out. There are plenty of books that he's written about this. And he pulled all production of every show he was working on in 1980, like months before the film came out. but people kind of remember the history and not the truth. Just like Chuck, even in that piece, he talks about how the film was shown on a Friday and was pulled by a Sunday, which may have happened, but I think it may have just, but from like the commentary I listened to that's on the disc that Shout Factory put out, the guy who's on the commentary, I can't remember his name right now, but he says that the movie ran for a couple of months, you know, probably like 6 weeks, and just floundered. And just people kind of remember it for being pulled and stuff like that. And just, or Chuck Barris talking about how it was pulled. And when you hear the guy who created the film talk about it, it becomes gospel. And people just forget the truth. And because that stuff's kind of hard to find, especially online, I wish there was, I know there's Box Office Mojo, but that only goes certain times and certain places unless you really, you can really find that stuff. But anyway. So like I said, this film was originally intended for Chuck, for Robert Downey Sr. to direct, and he directed half the film. And then I read in some things, and I also, this is what commentary, and I went and looked it up, that Chuck Barris kind of manhandled himself in because his ego got in the way, and he took over directing and gladly told his friend to go fuck off. And so the film has got this schizophrenic feel to it. It starts off as this kind of straightforward film about a guy burnt out by a situation and just not able to just hang out, have like his own life, right? So, you know, Chuck gets up in the morning. We see him do his jog. He's heading to his place of work, and he's getting a cup of coffee, and a guy on the street just kind of accosts him and says, "Hey, yo, I know who you are," and like, and he wants to perform for the guy. And Chuck is just like, "Come on, dude, let me have my coffee. Like, just let me have my coffee." And the guy gets pissed off and blows on the bird. And then Chucky and then Mr. Barris goes into his office, and we get kind of in vignettes of like 16 millimeter audition tapes and stuff like that, of stuff like that they videotaped for him, probably of auditions that were happening while he was also working on everything else. We get introduced to his secretary, who was played by the same woman who played Mama in Good Times, and his kind of the guy who runs, I guess, ratings and shares and whatnot, you know, the whole kind of Nielsen ratings and all that stuff. And he's telling him that, you know, we're going to do budget cuts because, you know, this, that, and the other. And he's like, "I never did this." Like, or he's like, "You should take limos into the office every day." He's like, "No, I drive myself." He's like, "Oh, you should." He's like, "Well, I guess I should." And he's like, "Nope, you can't because we cut it." Because he feels that the ratings are going to dip in the next 6 months. So he's pulling back his production and pulling back his money because he's got a whim that the production's going to go to shit. And you get this kind of thing where it's this, you know, Chuck go to his office. He goes and watches the people perform and do their auditions. As he's walking into his office, he gets accosted by everybody who's waiting to be auditioned. And they do their own shit. And he's just kind of sick of it. Right? And then we cut to, like, you know, backstage at the show. We cut to actual scenes of the show. We actually cut to stage pieces that they do where this guy, this old guy who did really well, Chuck kept bringing him back on, and he had a heart attack. It's a stage bit. But Chuck feels bad that the guy nearly died because of his arrogance. But then the guy's sitting there later when he leaves. He's trying to get out of the hospital, and he's showing Chuck his whole new act piece, and you're like, what the fuck? And he just, you know, he feels burnt out. He feels, like, liable that all these crazy people are coming out of the woodwork and just don't know how to stop because they just want that teeny bit of fame that everything has. A lot of people kind of, like, put on, like, The Real World as a show that was a catalyst for what we watch now. A lot of these kind of celebrity, pseudo-celebrity fucking, you know, camera and the life of bullshit. But really, to be honest, it should be put on the shoulders of Chuck Barris. Because of a show like The Gong Show, and the fact that he was able to kind of pull these people out of the woodwork and find these really unique and oddball talents and put them and show them on, you know, primetime TV every fucking day for like 4 years, really kind of goes, hey, and really test the censors and really test everybody and everything. You really have to put it on his shoulders and pat him on the back for doing that, because he changed the way TV was taken. There's a show that he did around that time called the $1.98 Beauty Pageant. I've talked about the show before. It stars Rip Torn is the host, and it's similar to the Gong Show. You have a dais of three guests, but it's all women, and they do the bathing suit section. They do their little bit, and whoever doesn't get gonged by the end of it wins a bouquet of rotten vegetables and $1.98 change. Now, the one thing that was burned in my head, is when you see Rip Torn's kind of gag is he's a flamboyantly gay man with a big mustache and a big poofy head of hair who walks around with a box of confetti or his pockets filled with confetti or whatever, and he blasts the audience with confetti as he walks out. One of the things that's burned in my sinews is this one episode I saw where clearly he probably didn't like this woman. As he's walking up and down the aisles in the thing, he just blasts her in the face, like, with three fistfuls of fucking confetti. And, like, it's like some old blue-haired woman, and she just gets fucking annihilated. And you're like, okay, that's cool. And he's just cackling. And there are old Letterman episodes where he comes on and does his performance, and you can clearly see the crowd is rowdy because it's got a early Letterman crowd, so it's like an early college crowd that he had in the 80s. And he is blasting these people with fucking confetti in the mouths. Like, they're just like, and they're like loving it. And they're trying to pull his fucking clothes off. And they're just getting, he is fucking getting pissed and just rifling people with confetti. And that's just been burned in my brain. And it just really is lovely. But anyway, so midway through the film, Downey is replaced by Chuck Barris. And Barris kind of turns it into this kind of song and dance, kind of existential crisis of the soul film. The character Chuck Barris goes from this guy who's burnt out and just kind of wants a break to a guy who's like on the verge of a nervous breakdown, right? And he ends up in the fucking desert, right? There's a couple scenes that were originally taped for the show which were cut because of censor issues, like the guy who farts on the candle, who blows the candle out from like 10 feet away. The scene where Jane P. Morgan, who was kind of like the Simon Cowell of that show because she was on so many fucking episodes, flashes her tits live on TV, but they cut it because, you know, you can't do that on television. There's vignettes within the film of showing different, of some of the better bits. There's a lot of Murray Langston in there, which is awful. Murray Langston was awful. That whole gag was the whole, you know, fucking unknown comic bullshit, or the Mean Gene, the Dancing Machine, which is fucking phenomenal. There's that one where they show where it's the two girls sucking on the lollipops, the ice pops, and they're just deep throating them down their throats. And it's like, it's so risque, but for like nowadays, it isn't. But for 1975, 77, 78, 79, 80, it was fucking cutting edge. Right? So the second half of the film is, like I said, it's like he's having this existential fucking meltdown where he ends up in the, you know, he tries to kind of stop things and change things and wants to just hide and get away from people, and he ends up fucking in the desert somewhere. And also another thing is that there's a lot of sung and dance. It's like a weird musical, this film, on which all the songs were written by Chuck Barris because he was also a jingle writer, and he wrote a couple songs that people should know. I love the hell out of this film, right? It was a film that performed shittily, and it's got a cult following, but it's clearly still a cult film. It's not like a lot of films where they have the title cult, but everybody and their mother knows about it. It's become this, what the fuck? It has become this kind of relic of the time. But it's a uniquely fun and interesting film. Even though it's schizophrenic, it keeps you occupied for the 90 minutes it's going. Like I said, it's out. I think it's on Tubi. Yeah, it's actually on Tubi right now, but there's a Blu-ray from Shout Factory if you want to pick it up. And yeah, that's pretty much what I have to say.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all. sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
From another galaxy, from another world, comes the embodiment of fear.
What the hell was that?
Night Beast, terror from beyond. A high-tech warrior from a distant planet. A killing machine with a taste for human flesh. A community abandoned in a code of silence.
Wicker never even called the state. They don't even know we have a bad situation here.
A love affair.
You know, you're a very attractive girl, Lisa.
Two people brought together by the urgency of the moment. Two people torn apart by the savage fury of Night Beast.
I'm sorry, Jeremy. There was nothing that could be done.
The most vicious creature to ever span the intergalactic void has come to pay its respects. This is the story of how the little people answer the big questions. See the movie that will change the face of modern science fiction cinema. Night Beast, terror from beyond.
Night Beast, 1982. This is technically like a sequel slash remake of Don Dohler's first film, The Alien Factor. The reason why that is because everybody who's in the film, all the actors, are actually playing similar characters to The Alien Factor. But that's about it. Written and directed by Don Dohler. Don Dohler is best known as a cult director who made a lot of Alien films. He made Alien Factor 2, 3, this. I think this is probably his best film out of all of them. Because of its kind of insanity and how fucking ballsy it is for what it is, for what time period it was. Dohler kind of started out as a fanzine writer and a creator who got like the 60s hippie fucking comic artists to contribute work to him, and other kind of film writers and film, you know, filmmakers and stuff like that as a kid. The score for this film was actually done by J.J. Abrams. Yes, that J.J. Abrams who through one of Dohler's magazines found out about this and sent him a letter saying, hey, can I do the score? And he said, sure. And Abrams sent him a bunch of tapes with the stuff with the score on it. It's a really cool score. I would love to see a vinyl release of it. I don't know. There probably is. If there is, tell me, please. But this is about a lone alien who's cruising around in a spaceship. And he gets hit by an asteroid, lands on Earth, burns to the ground, which is the goofiest and silliest fucking cheap shit, because it looks like a tent. It's painted silver and put on fire and firecrackers. And then you have this alien who is this big-headed monster that is fucking scary as shit. If you saw that in the dark, in its silver costume with his big fucking hands, walking around with his ray gun, and it's got these big monster teeth, big wide eyes, drooling all the time, you'd shit yourself. Seriously. I would. Like, if I saw that thing roaming through the Jersey fucking woods here, I'd fucking die. I'd die. So he pretty much just gets out of his ship, starts walking around, And any person he comes in contact with, he just fucking wrecks house and kills them. Either by shooting them and vaporizing them or just tearing their insides apart. The sheriff and his assistant, his deputy, get wind of this. They try to stop it as best they can before the nightfall, before the daytime happens. They tell the mayor. The mayor is not particularly concerned. He's more interested in having the governor over for a pool party and doesn't tell the rest of the state about it. So it's up to the couple of hillbillies, a couple of townies, and the sheriff and his deputy slash girlfriend to stop this fucking thing from happening. There are a bunch of little lulls in the film. There are a couple of low moments where it's just the characters kind of talking. But you have some really fun moments. You have this dick-headed character. I can't remember his name. Now I'm going to look it up because it's like, what the fuck is this guy? And it's like, the jacket, the leather jacket wearing asshole. And it's like, okay, this dickhead. I love him. But I can't remember his name right now. I'm kind of really blanking out because this is the second time I've done this fucking episode and I'm not particularly in the mood anymore. Drago, played by Don LeFerret. Drago is kind of a motorcycle ride jacket. He's a real piece of shit. Beats up a woman at one time. You hear the cat? So you have the good old boy and the sheriff with his assistant who are teaming up. You have people just collateral damage left, right, and center. There's people just getting killed. Kids get killed. Like, he vaporizes a car with two kids in it. It's really ballsy for 83. It's ballsy in general to kill kids in a film. But it's just that it kind of goes like that. The thing runs around kind of causing havoc. And it's up to our sheriff to stop it at all costs. It's a fun little film. For what it is. The great thing about it is that this was a film that was released by Troma back in the day, so it was available. And I remember watching it on VHS when I was a kid, and the VHS was shit because Troma never really spent the money on actually doing proper releases. They would just put out trash, good films, but put them in trash releases. So all the dark moments, and especially in the beginning and then near the end of the film, are kind of crap. You're like, ugh. But then when you watch this Vinegar Syndrome release, they actually did this really good restoration, 2K restoration of the film from original negatives. And it looks fucking awesome. Now, it's a film that's really easy to talk about because it's a monster movie. You got this fucking dude in a rubber monster suit running around killing people. And you have, everybody kind of speaking pseudo-stupid science and trying to kill this thing as best they can, but they kind of come short. Will they, won't they get the thing? Will this dude just kill everybody and fucking annihilate the town? They actually, at one point, the sheriff is able to get everybody in town to either leave or lock themselves in their places, so they're not out, so they can just kind of worry about this motherfucker and that's it. It's kooky. It warms the cockles of my dead heart. I watched this a couple nights ago, and I'm doing a movie night on the 18th. So this Saturday. So if you live in the area and you know me, privately message me. I'll send you my address. You can come over. We're watching a movie. We're going to do Bad Taste. So the Peter Jackson alien invasion film. And this is a good kind of double feature for that. And I think I'm going to do that. I think I'm going to do Night Beast after. Because it's such a good time. Especially with a crowd of people. I really like this film. And out of all the films that Doler made, I think it's the most comprehensive, because he just kept going back to the well with the alien factor, and it's the same fucking film over and over again. But this film is so, just unique and fun and kind of really gross. I don't really want to get deep, super deep into it, because it's not a film that's not super deep. It's not like the Gong Show movie where you can actually think about why these fucking people were doing what they did and why Chuck Barris kind of took Robert Downey out of the film and kind of made it his own, existential crisis thing. This is just a guy who really enjoys filmmaking and really enjoys film, going in to make his own film and having a really good time making it. And you can definitely tell the cast really has a good time because they all came back from the last film and said, hey, yeah, sure. And he pretty much wrote the same story with the same characters. And they all just kind of took their roles as if it was a troupe and just did it again, which is just a fun, it's a beautifully fun time. that's all I have to say about it. So we have one voicemail. I'm actually just going to play it from my phone because it's going to be easier than trying to cut and paste it. So somebody named Michael Caine called the voicemail line. Oh, they didn't call the voicemail. Actually, sent an email. And he's got something to say. So why don't we hear what he has to say?
This is Michael Caine, award-winning actor from such films as The Quiet American and Jaws for the Revenge. Now, I'm told by my lovely wife, Shakira, that this is where I call in for the Motion Picture Massacre podcast. Anyway, if I'm speaking to Vaughn, I just want to say you're doing a very adequate job, son. Most people do not zero in on the obscure and often overlooked cinema quite like you do. Some people would even say you're doing an above adequate job, but not me. Anyway, I'm so dreadfully sorry to hear that you're getting surgery soon. Apparently, they're going to take out your bollocks. Now, it's not all doom and gloom, Vaughn. From what I understand, thankfully, in this modern age, they can replace them with synthetic bollocks made from pig parts in small bags of sand. Most people did not know that. Anyway, carry on as you've a fan in Caine. Keep the wolves away from the door, all that, pip-pip and cheerio.
I talked to his handlers a couple of weeks ago, and I guess it's legitimate, you know. It's nice that he's still sitting in that house that he got from Jaws 3. that's just fucking great. Yeah, no, you know what? It wasn't my balls, even though I did get them back with a divorce. It was kind of hard. I had to unbronze them. That was kind of tough. But it was a quick insert. I have a zipper there. Just zip, zip, put them back in, and totally fine. But, you know, thyroids are another thing. They're terrible fucking things. If you have any issues with your thyroid, I'm going to do a PSA, you know, the more you know kind of thing right now. I didn't really handle it. Like, I should have. So my thyroid, I kind of, what's the best way to say this? I took over, I had to make a choice. It was either work on my relationship with my ex-wife or work on my health. And I worked on my relationship. And look how well that got me. I'm now divorced. we still have a terrible time. It's going to be a huge road to hoe, fucking hill to climb, hedge to jump, whatever. I think I'm very happy right now with whatever what's going on with her. But, like, it's just a lot. But I didn't take care of it. When the doctor said, hey, you need to do this, I didn't listen to them. I didn't take it seriously. And then when I came back to it this year, they were like, yeah, it's got to come out. You're fucked if you don't kick it out. You're just going to continue to rot and fall apart, and you're going to die. And I was like, okay, sure. And I met with a surgeon. He looked at it and said, yeah, we need to go. And it's done. I'm now medication on the rest of my life. But, like, my girlfriend also got it done a couple years, too, because she had a fucking cyst on it the size of a fucking small golf ball, and she had to get it rid of it. But, yeah, like, so thank you to Michael Caine for that. I can't wait to... an adequate job that I'm doing. I think I'm very happy to hear about that. If you'd like to get in touch with me, just like he did, he emailed me. But that's motionpicturemassacre@gmail.com. If you'd like to leave a voicemail, that's 732-639-1435. 732-639-1435. motionpicturemassacre@gmail.com. motionpicturemassacre@gmail.com. Fuck me. I hope this version of the fucking episode will come out proper, and I won't have to blow my brains out and then quit fucking podcasting. Because fuck you. This is a nice time to get back to do this show. My life is kind of at its happiest, I guess you could say. It's probably the happiest I've ever been in, like, the last 10 years. And if you're listening to this, you're an old friend of mine who doesn't know I'm divorced. Surprise? I don't know. All right. Before I shit myself, goodbye. Holy shit, that was good. Oh, that felt great. Oh, wait. Let me hit stop.
Hey, Godzilla! It's over! You must forgive! Damn lizard!